tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we have a dynamic duo on the show with us. We have Tia Williams, who is the director of Cat Solutions 305, and Dr. Matt Toscano, who is the executive director and chief of surgery for the Street Cat Clinic in Miami. We are focusing on community cats in Miami. So Tia, tell me first, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats?
I'm late to the party. I was a dog person for most of my life. And we moved to Miami and I realized there's a lot of cats here and there was a lot more help for dogs. And I kind of felt like I needed to go where they needed more help, which was cats in Miami. We have one of the largest problems of overpopulation here with the warm weather. So that's where my focus is now.
And Dr. Matt, tell me about your story.
I started in animal welfare basically my last year of college. I kind of have the same story as probably many others do, where they wanted to be a veterinarian since they could think about what they wanted to be. I didn't really think it was a real possibility until I learned about the public student loan forgiveness. And so in my last year of college, I volunteered. They actually didn't allow you to volunteer at the shelters, so I changed that. So it seemed like a good opportunity. And I was blown away with really amazing people doing really sad work. And I had no experience. Like, I knew nothing about it. And I couldn't believe that that was the status of animals in America. I just felt like we could be doing so much better. So that has stayed with me. I could really think about like the wall of cats that we used to euthanize and just people bringing them in all day long. And again, like nobody was being in any way, shape or form cruel. It was more just how things happened. So the staff was just doing their job, you know, very caring, loving people. So that really affected me. And it's stuck in my head as I kind of pursued every other course of animal welfare years into it until I realized all I thought about and all I cared about was the shelter. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was kind of bored. Even in emergency clinics, I was kind of bored because all I could think about was what was happening at the shelter. What are they doing? What are they doing now? How can I help? So that kind of led me down the natural path of becoming a veterinarian. So that was my start in it. And I still think about that as something that some shelters still do and still have to do because they can't come up with any other solutions or don't have the access to the resources. So yeah, I just think that had a profound impact on my life. And it was a really great experience for what was to come.
I'm going to pull out a few words you just said about organizations not being able to come up with solutions. So I started in an environment where euthanizing cats was actually not an option. The organization I started working with in 1994, they were founded in 92, and euthanizing community cats was just not part of our, it was just not in the DNA of our organization. We had to find other alternatives and pathways. So in saying can't come up with other solutions over your journey over these years, what you might have thought as being an obstacle before, do you see something more clearly now as to what are potential solutions for reducing cat overpopulation, serving the needs of community cats? You know, what's your shining light that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, 100%. And I think the answer to that is stop treating them like dogs. So what I realize is like animal shelters are doing their best, but really they were never built for successful outcomes. That wasn't really what they were intended to do. And so when we look at them through the lens of dogs, it makes sense for what they were intended to do, right? But when you look at them with cats, it just seems like cats were just thrown on top. No one had any idea what to do with them. And so kind of euthanasia became like an easy answer. And so I think from then to now, it's amazing how many groups have considered return to field, considered TNR. And it's more of the norm now than definitely back then, which was probably about 20 years ago at this point. So I think that was it. That's my one kind of piece of clarity, is stop treating cats like dogs. And then solutions kind of start coming to you naturally, because you consider what's best for this cat in front of me. Is it best to put it outside? Is it best to find it a home? Is it best to euthanize it because it's not doing well in a lot of ways that can be helped? So I think that became really clear to me, that cats are just their own species. And for some reason, we've just perpetually treated them like dogs, and it just didn't work. So I'm really excited to see a lot of other options and solutions for specifically cats on the spectrum of where they live and what's best for them, not what's best for us.
And I just also will clarify, the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society does euthanize cats when the need is there. It's not that we don't. It's just that if there is a healthy cat that's able to be returned, or if there's a cat that somebody needs medical treatment in order to be able to keep the cat, we just serve the needs of the family and the cat in order to do what's best for that unit at that particular time. So sort of case management for each individual scenario. And we're not on a pathway of like, if this, then that, without doing some holistic consideration and understanding the environment. But Tia, in Miami, please tell me, what's life like for community cats? You said there are just so many cats. It's warm. Who wouldn't want to live in Miami, right? So tell me about the challenges. What's the landscape like for community cats down there?
So we have a very urban community of homeless cats, and there are a lot of challenges that go along with an urban landscape. We have properties that we can't access. We have some areas that some people aren't comfortable going in and trapping. We have kittens year round, so our kitten season doesn't really end. We have more during the summer, and then we still have a lot during the winter. So we are constantly trapping, and it just always feels like we're not really keeping up with the birth rate. I mean, it's a very hard life down here. Most of the kittens, I think I've heard 70%, don't make it to their first birthday. We're dealing with all kinds of situations, people who don't like cats, vehicles, just diseases if there's nobody to intervene, like a rescuer or a trapper. And these situations are creating some very serious health issues and challenges for anybody who wants to help these cats.
I'm just looking up the population of, so you're doing the whole, are you covering the whole county? So what's your target area, or is it just the city of Miami?
We're all over the county. Right now we have 42 people registered to work with Street Cat Clinic. So they're either a rescuer, a trapper, or a feeder. We're trying to take a really comprehensive look at the people that are involved with helping cats and connecting those people and creating those partnerships that make it both easier, but also gives us the ability to help the maximum number that we possibly can. So we want the trappers to work with the feeders and the feeders to work with the trappers. We want to find those rescues that can help us with fostering the medically needy cats or the kittens that we don't want to put back out on the street. So we're trying to come up with a really comprehensive solution that isn't just trap a lot of cats and put them all back. We're doing like what you referenced, that kind of case management approach where, yeah, maybe 70 or 80% of the cats, we can return them and that's the best outcome for them. But what are we doing with the other ones? That's how I hope we get more people involved and keep them working with us, because we are trying to have those positive solutions. It's not just a one solution fits every cat. We need to look at each one and decide what is the best thing for that particular cat.
Right. And the environment that it's coming from, and that it would potentially be returned back to, or what its options would be on the other side too. And I certainly understand that there are different types of decisions that are made potentially in July than February, even if you do have kitten season in February being different than the July, you are going to make different decisions. I made different decisions in July versus February too. And I knew how to, I mean, I could tell you after years, you know, exactly what the year was going to look like. I knew when my volunteers were going to leave. I knew, you know, when people were going to move out of vacation areas, and I could predict really on a chart exactly what the flows that cat flow was going to happen for my organization. And then it translated into a blog post I called Cat Cycling, so that I could kind of organize my resources so that we were trying to flatline our resources all across rather than feeling like we're having to ebb and flow, because I find it's really hard for an organization, even one that is in a rescue-based environment that's not in a physical shelter, but it's really hard to breathe and to like expand to 300 cats and then to retract to 100 cats. And then this is hard. It's hard for staffing. Look at your veterinarian. I mean, Dr. Matt, he wants to know he's got 50 cats every day to do. He doesn't want 20 one day and 80 the next day. So as an organization, Dr. Matt, working with these TNR groups as a veterinarian, how do you keep your business going, your new clinic going, but also understand that there's a lot of unpredictable situations for those community cat trappers?
Yeah, we founded this clinic. It's a nonprofit, and we decided that collaboration was going to be our biggest friend. So essentially, in my experience, veterinary teams and trappers don't really get along. And I don't think that's too far from the truth for probably a lot of people. And what it is that expectation, right? So exactly what you're describing. So if the veterinary clinic opens at 8 o'clock, we assume everyone's going to be on time, ready to go, get us the cats, and then get out of our way, right? And then for the trappers, they've been up all night. They've been trapping. They had nowhere to put the cats. Now they have to wake back up, bring the cats, be on time. So we don't really consider each other and what we're both going through, right? And so we really wanted to collaborate and say, with the founding of this nonprofit, we were going to reconsider everything that we thought about each other and in each respective field. So when we did design the clinic, we designed it so that it could be hurricane proof in the way of we have a generator. Right. So if people are out trapping, we can still be here for them, for those cats. But acknowledging we're probably going to do more foster and rescue kittens on those days. Right. So we need to be ready to flex and do that, because they probably couldn't catch that many traps that night. And then things just like having a code for the back door where each trapper can come and go. They don't have to wait for us to open. They can try to get some sleep. I don't know how they do it. It's crazy. But essentially just really thinking about what the other side goes through, and then how do we design the clinic to mimic and assist what we both do. And so I think to your point, like having the trappers have the ebbs and flows, we need to adjust to it, but we can do that in other ways, especially with special procedures. If we know it's going to be a really hot or really hurricane-y out, we can say, okay, let's do some special procedures this day. Let's give the vet team some time to breathe and not do, you know, a million cats, but acknowledging that it's going to be a really hard week to trap or something like that. Even just as something simple, like putting up an awning to say, hey, we know you're dropping off cats in the rain, right? And we don't expect anyone to do that without coverage from the rain. So to your point, I think we really try to make this 50-50. How can we do our best work when we're working best together?
Yeah. I own involved in owning a couple of clinics in Georgia, the community cat clinic, where we have a room in the back in both of the clinics with the keypad and a bathroom, which they're very excited about. I would have to say the trappers really love the bathroom, but they come in and then they just can put the cats up on the racks. Obviously, these are known and loved community cat trappers that we have a relationship already, but then they can come and load up like room for probably 30 or 40 cats in there. And so that then when the veterinarians come in, they know what they've got ahead of them for the day. And then if emergency happens too, and they have to bring a cat in, then they can work around even with those. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of benefit to working with community cats and cats in traps from even a private practice clinic standpoint. But my fear is, the thought that I have is that some of our other clinics, our private practice clinics that might want to get involved with helping community cats, they don't even know how to deal with cats in traps. When you were working in emergency or before getting really deeply involved in this, did you get a flavor of what it was like for private practice veterinarians and their exposure to community cat spay neuter?
No, I think it's exactly as you described. I think you're comfortable with what you do the most, right? And so most general practices, I don't even think I could even picture a time where we did cats and traps, which is why it's so appealing to me, because it's kind of this avoided part of veterinary medicine, which is, it's fine. If you're not comfortable with it, that's totally fine. But I agree with you that there's a component of discomfort and kind of like a unwillingness to want to do it. And honestly, most of the time, they're also not getting paid, right? So they don't, or maybe they are, but it's mostly people who are looking for help. And I think if you're running a business, that it's a scary thing to accept a lot that you're not getting paid. For us, we designed it so that we can efficiently do a high number. And we are so lucky to live in Miami-Dade County because they pay per cat for us to spay neuter. So we don't have the stressor of charging the trapper for that cat. So I think that there's a lot of discomfort with TNR and in general practice. And I think there's a lot of good reason for them to be uncomfortable. It even comes down to, you know, what drugs are you using? How are you giving them? Who's comfortable poking through a trap? If you're doing it 50 times a day, you get really comfortable really fast. But if you haven't done it in a long time, or if it's something you've never done, that's a scary thing to do. So I think there's a lot of ways where general practice doesn't really fit TNR. And so that's why we want it to be this building to what you were saying too, designed for the trappers and for the medical team to feel comfortable in.
More spay-neuter surgeries don't always mean fewer cats. The key to real change? Targeting. Join Neighborhood Cats' experts for some TNR program management training in a certification workshop entitled Targeted TNR and Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck on May 17th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Learn how to focus your efforts where they matter most so your program can make a bigger impact with the same resources. This two-hour workshop is packed with practical tips, real-life case studies, and interactive learning, and includes a certificate of completion after you pass a brief test. Don't just fix more cats, fix smarter. Register now for Targeted TNR and getting the most bang for your buck. Registration is just $10 at communitycatspodcast.com/TNR training. Once again, that's communitycatspodcast.com/TNR training. What if a conversation could save a cat's home and prevent them from the trauma of a shelter stay? As a surrender prevention specialist, your words can make all the difference. Join Dr. Rachel Geller on May 14th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time for a live session on the most effective behavior solutions to prevent unnecessary surrenders. You'll learn how to help struggling cat owners overcome challenges like litter box problems, scratching, and aggression. You'll earn a digital certificate after passing the certification quiz, get 3 additional behavior modules to watch after the webinar, access to session recordings, extensive handouts, and exclusive networking opportunities. Spots are limited. Register now for the Surrender Prevention Certification Workshop. It's just $10 at communitycatspodcast.com/keepthecat. That's communitycatspodcast.com/keepthecat.
In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. #BeAHelper.
Kittens may be small, but caring for them takes big knowledge. And the Online Kitten Conference is here to help. Join us on June 7th and 8th for 2 full days of expert-led sessions focused entirely on kitten care, fostering, and program management. From bottle feeding to behavior, this conference covers it all. It's a fully virtual event, so you can tune in from anywhere. And registration includes access to the recordings, slides, and handouts. You'll hear from experienced professionals, get access to valuable resources, and connect with a community that shares your passion for saving lives. Learn more and register at communitycatspodcast.com/kittens because the tiniest lives deserve the best care.
Tia, tell me a little bit more about this golden parachute program here. If you've got Dr. Matt getting paid for the surgeries, tell me what is special in Miami with money for community cats?
We're really lucky that Miami recognizes that it has a serious overpopulation of cats and has committed a lot of resources and budget to really having a serious impact. And so basically the county is our client and we're just helping them reach their TNR numbers that will hopefully at some point, we don't know when, have a decrease in kitten season. I mean, that's really how we measure success. And so we have not, the shelter by itself is not able to get to that number of surgeries. So there are other organizations, the ASPCA, the Humane Society of Greater Miami, the Miami Veterinary Foundation. All of these programs are helping and doing a certain number of cats, but we really saw a need to boost it in a very significant number that those other organizations were really only able to address a smaller part of it, which didn't always work for the trappers. So when Street Cat Clinic, the idea of it came up, I knew there was a very short list of vets that might be able to do that kind of high volume, high quality spay neuter, but also that just wanted to work with community cats. Like, I knew there was not a lot of people. There's a veterinary shortage, not just vets themselves, but also vet techs. And we were just very lucky that the people that wanted to make this happen found each other and started talking about it and realized that, yes, we could actually do this in a way that makes sense. And I don't know if I would say profitable, but definitely possible. And again, I think a lot of it is the county made that commitment and we were just able to come to them and say, this is our plan. This is what we want to do. We feel like we can have a significant contribution to what you're already have going on with these other organizations.
So I'm going to take a little bit of a deep dive journey here with regards to the philosophy of my community cat calculator. So it sounds like you've done, Tia, some of the elements of a needs assessment. You've looked at the spay neuter surgeries that have been offered by a variety of other organizations. And I don't know if you have those numbers, if it's in the tens of thousands, if it's above that. And you're also looking at the community. And in the Boston area, when we started really analyzing the cat overpopulation situation in Boston, we took the zip codes that had the highest intake rates and we used those as our target zones. And we really, really went deep with own spay neuter as well as community cat spay neuter. And that's what really moved the needle in reducing the cat intakes from those areas, especially on the kittens. We had 60% kitten drops where in those zip codes where we did owned and TNR spay neuter. And then we also had communities where we had 30% drops, but we only did owned. We didn't have a TNR group covering that area. Have you done any of that type of needs assessment or strategy in targeting in the county?
I have. I mean, that's one of the things that I find most interesting is that kind of research and that kind of data collection. While Miami-Dade County has committed a lot of resources and money to their cat programs, we're located right on the borderline of Broward County, which is Fort Lauderdale and the surrounding areas, and they have not committed quite as much to their cat programs. And so we're serving both of those. And my attitude is, look, the cats don't know what zip code they're in. The cats don't know which community they're in, but they still need help. And so how do we serve those cats and also help the trappers, the rescuers, the feeders, and stay within those budget constraints? And how do we, what does that look like? How do we make that work? And it is quite a challenge sometimes, but I think the results speak for themselves. I mean, nobody wants to back an unsuccessful program, but when we say, look what's possible, look what we're getting done, here are the numbers you need, people have been pretty responsive. I mean, we want to continue with that and hopefully get Broward looking at their cat problem and dealing with it the same way that Miami has, which is making that commitment. Help us help you get these cats and fix these problems that ultimately, we're keeping these cats out of the shelter when we do this. And that, I think, makes sense when you're having those budgetary issues and your shelter is overextended. And the truth is, none of these shelters can be no-kill without a significant cat program, especially a TNR program. There's absolutely no way for them to be no-kill if they are not taking care of these community cats.
Well, and I mean, the reality to a certain degree is that just what Dr. Matt was saying earlier is that the sheltering structure as we have it today is not really designed for the needs of cats. it's really not the best end product. 25% of our public gets our cats from friends and family. The other 25% get them as strays out in the backyard. The other 20 to 22% get them from shelters. And then the rest are a hodgepodge of breeders and other whatever. But in pretty much general terms, 75% of our cats are not coming from this shelter ecosystem that we have out there. But yet the needs of the cats that we want to serve is much greater than that. And Dr. Matt is attacking this situation with regards to supporting community cats, trap, neuter, return, or in Florida, you all say TNVR, right? Trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return. So Dr. Matt, I want to ask you, with this clinic that you've developed, what is your volume? What are you hoping to attain on an annual basis for surgeries?
So we're looking, our goal is 80 cats a day, open 4 days a week, and we're doing 10-hour days. So in my experience, can't really get enough done in 8 hours like you can in 10. 10 just is a whole different experience. So essentially, what we've decided was 80 is the number that we're going to strive for. Currently, we're at about 45. We're only 4 months in, though. So I think that we're trying to not get ahead of ourselves. We're building a team, right? We're doing a lot of training. A lot of people who have never done this before want to join in. And so that takes some slowdown. But essentially, I think what's important to always remember, too, is even though we want to do a lot, we want to have a career, we want to have an impact, and we want to reduce kitten season and all these things, we're still helping 80 cats a day, right? And so at the end of the day, I feel like people don't speak about dogs in that way. And so I like to always remind myself, we helped these cats. Each cat is my patient. And so I want to make sure that that patient got the best care, because it probably won't see a vet again. And so to me, yes, I want to reduce the cat population. Yes, all these things are very important, but I'm still individually helping each one of those cats, whether it just be a flea treatment, just spaying it so it doesn't live its life reproducing while it's sick. I just have to keep reminding myself of that. And then additionally, we do a lot of special procedures and treatments, and we like to help the trappers when they're out there and they are rescuing kittens or sick cats. I can first be their first consult, right? Like at no charge to them, just show me this cat and I'll tell you what I think. Because a lot of the times it's a big financial investment and I'm going to give you my honest opinion on whether or not you should spend that money. And so we've got a great group of people who are bringing us cats, and it does take a lot of time out of the day to do those. But I think it's really important to be available to the rescuers and trappers when they do find these sick cats, not just leave them out on the lurch or have them subjected to really high, potentially really high prices at other veterinary clinics, and to just be there for them. Even if it's just for my opinion, I think it's important. So at the end of the day, to answer your question, we're looking to do 80 a day, 4 days a week. But I think just being a presence in the community, specifically for community cats, is valuable unto itself.
Yeah, for sure. So you, if I had to guess, you have at least a support team of somewhere between 6 to 10 technicians in your pipeline?
So right now we actually are really lucky. We got my former colleague. We met 10 years ago and we've been working together on and off ever since. She's a wonderful licensed veterinary technician who's now in charge of the clinic. So she just started 2 to 3 weeks ago, and realizing all the help I need, it was amazing. She came from California. And now she's here helping with the clinic. And then we have another licensed veterinary technician. And in Florida, you don't have to be licensed to do a lot of things, but I really value the license. And so we're really trying to show that and help people use that license for what they intended it for. And then, of course, veterinary assistants. That's how I started. And so people who are brand new in the field coming in. So right now we've got one amazing volunteer who gives us 20 hours a week as a volunteer vet assistant, and another full-time veterinary assistant. So yeah, we are looking to pretty much double the crew to get to 80, but we're feeling good at 45 with who we've got now. And I'm getting more and more volunteer applications too. So, which, you know, is you always need time to train. So that can be kind of a mixed bag, but it's been a really good 4 month start.
So in your clinic, do you have 2 surgical tables or more than 2?
I have 4 prep tables, 4 surgical tables. I think we can't go without saying a big thank you to the building owner, who's kind of our triangle. Dr. Bridget Rock is owned the building. She let me design it the way I wanted to, and she fully renovated it with all my suggestions and designs. She equipped it. She's been our kind of
angel.
She's a huge cat lover, a huge animal welfare advocate. And so we can't go without thanking her in this podcast for sure. But she was so great because I had a design already written years ago that I drew out. And it's really funny because Tia and I, we had met in a previous job where I was working at a previous clinic. And we were talking one day and I said, I had this idea about a check cashing business that is for sale. If I could potentially or like rent it, it's a perfect little divide between the back and the front. And so you can have the traps on the lobby side and the clinic in the backside, and it has a secure door and it'll be perfect. And then weeks later, she said someone had literally bought a check cashing business and was interested in helping cats. So it was crazy kismet.
That was my hook. I was like, I just have to get him into seeing it and then he's going to want to do this.
Yeah. So. But it was really insane. The kind of same kind of wavelength we were all on for what was needed. And yeah, so to answer your question, I have 4 surgery tables and 4 prep tables that Dr. Bridget Rock had purchased and is letting us use. And we've designed each prep table to be kind of its own little self-sufficient island. And so each step, right, takes time. And so how do we do this without taking that many steps? So everything we've done is kind of in mind. And I don't think it's unique in any way in the way of high volume TNR, but it's really fun to design it and think about all the little things that take a lot of time. So as I was saying, like I was a vet assistant, I was a kennel cleaner, I was an unlicensed vet tech, all these things I really like poured into this because of all the things I've seen as inefficiencies, you know, like doctors dumping their whole tray of clean instruments. Why? They're clean. Oh, I don't need to scrub them. So all these little things that I noticed through the years I've been writing down and keeping kind of a log of, and hoping to implement them here so that we can get to 80 a day without killing the team.
Yeah. Yeah. The next question in our next podcast is going to be, what's in your spay pack? What instruments are in your spay pack? Because it seems like everybody has a different opinion with regards to that. Well, we're getting close on time here. So Dr. Matt, tell us, how could people find out more about your clinic?
We keep our website up to date. It's streetcatclinic.org. All of our information is on there. And that actually directly links to Tia's website, Cat Solutions 305, because she does coordinate all of our cat capacity. So all of our information is streetcatclinic.org. We're on Instagram, and then Tia's at Cat Solutions 305, and that also could be linked through our website.
Excellent. Tia, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we close today?
I hope that more people want to try to help cats and hear what we're doing and maybe figure out how to bring it to wherever they are. And if anybody ever wants to reach out and has any questions about what we're doing, I would be happy to answer them. They can reach me at catsolutions305@gmail.com, or again, the website is catsolutions305.org. And then also, I love the fact that Community Cats Podcast is such a resource. I mean, we're doing Cat Stats, which is Brian Corda's, and we had reached out to Rick Ducharme to talk about his community cat clinics, and it's such a great community and such a great resource. We really appreciate all the information that we get from everybody that comes on here.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think the world of what's going on down in Miami, and I also think it's great having a TNR group as well as a veterinary practice collaborating together to being on the same team, as folks may say that. And if you are a TNR group in what we would consider a veterinary desert, it doesn't mean you can't create some spay-neuter capacity. You just have to adjust your programs. You have to create a clinic, whether it's MASH style, a once-a-month MASH style clinic, a clinic in a clinic. If you're in a rural area, maybe it's doing getting access to a veterinary clinic one day a week and getting a relief veterinarian in. I understand there's a whole range of other ideas, but be creative. You were creative. You were both very creative. How could we make this work? How can we use the skills of Dr. Matt, the skills of Tia, and this beautiful gift from God, from the Miami funding sources out there? Let's not let a dollar be missed and take this as an opportunity to be able to assist as many community cats as possible. So I want to thank you both for all that you're doing for community cats down Miami. And thank you both for agreeing to be a guest on my show. And I'm hopeful when you hit, what is it? I calculated it out. Over 16,000 cats a year, Dr. Matt. We're going to have a birthday cake here on this Community Cats podcast for you to celebrate. It's pretty close to a super clinic. We say 20,000 cats a year is a super clinic. So you're going to get up there into the league of super clinics. So we'll definitely have you back to celebrate that. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.